to the Beef Watch Podcast. I'm Aaron Berger, a Nebraska Extension educator. For today's Beef Watch Podcast, we're going to discuss an article from the July issue of the Beef Watch newsletter titled, Is That Corn Crop Worth More as Silage or as Grain? To have a conversation about this, I'm joined today by the co-author, Dr. Galen Erickson, who's a Nebraska Extension beef feedlot specialist. Thanks for joining me today.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Dr. Erickson, this is a topic that you've done a lot of work on in the past, looking at the use of corn silage in feedlot rations, also thinking about how do we value this corn as we think about what do we do to get a price on it if we're looking at somebody going to buy a neighbor's corn crop and then chop it, bring it back to their place and then sile it. Initially, talk through with us some of the principles we need to understand about valuing that corn crop, thinking here specifically of that corn standing in the field.
Yeah, it's a common question, and especially, there's a couple scenarios. One is when we have drought damage, silage or corn, or hail damage, right? Those are kind of abnormal or unique situations, I would say. Hopefully abnormal and certainly unique. But if we're talking normal corn crop, right, productive field, looks like going to be good yields, and certainly looks like good yields this year. They avoided any of those abnormal situations. So in that scenario, it's really important to price it correctly, both for the crop producer or your neighbor, as well as for yourself. And I think people remember rules of thumb. And the old days, the rules of thumb, everybody remembered 10 times corn price. And then you hear 12 times corn price. And those have some value, but that's when it's delivered to the cattle, and 10's not the right number, and turns out 12's only right sometimes. But when you're talking about standing in the field, we actually have calculated it, and it's a little complex, but it comes out to be about 7.6 to 7.8 times the price of corn. The actual number, if everybody wants to know, the actual number is 7.65 times the price of corn. And Aaron, a couple of key things there. One is that assumes 35% dry matter. And then that's obviously corn price that's 85% dry matter. So for example, if we just take $4.25 per bushel corn, you'd simply take 4.25 times 7.65. And that's your as-is ton price for the corn silage standing in the field. But again, that's assuming it's 35% dry matter. So if it's drier than that, obviously that ratio, that price per ton can go up because you're getting more dry matter. Conversely, if it's wetter, which is what I really worry about, then you're buying water.
So again, just for clarity for those who are listening, if we're thinking about corn price today, and it looks like that's going to be probably somewhere around $4 a bushel, at least as we record this today, it's going to be 7.65 times four, which gets us right around that $30, a little over $30 per ton, standing in the field.
Yep. And that's, so I would pay you, if you were my neighbor, I'd pay you $30.60 per ton at a 35% dry matter, 65% moisture.
So obviously that's the target, but we also know that the target always doesn't get hit. So how do we adjust? Do we just take a percentage of that moisture and adjust the price? How does that look as we think about silage that's a little drier or a little wetter?
Well, and this is what I also strongly recommend everybody does with lots of wet feeds. Probably should do it with dry feeds too. But at the time of purchase or the time of chopping, sample that and get a moisture on it. Send it into a lab, and you can sample it. You know, take a bunch of samples across days and then composite them into one or however you want to do it. But get a dry matter or moisture on that at the time of harvest, not the time of feeding it. And the reason that's important to get it at the time of harvest is because corn silage will actually get wetter as it's in the bunker by about 1 percentage point. But anyway, I think the best way to do it is simply a ratio adjustment on that price. As it gets drier, you would increase that price. As it gets wetter, you would decrease the price just on a ratio. So that 30.6, you could multiply times the ratio that's drier or wetter, if that makes sense.
Yes. Yep. So one of the other things you talk about in the article, and I think this is important as we think about corn silage, there's a lot of nutrient removal that happens with that. And there's also then the opportunity to apply manure back on that ground. Speak to that a little bit, because that really is part of this whole system when we think about corn silage.
Yeah, and this is something that I think we didn't appreciate in the older days. You know, over a decade ago, came to this realization that when we were buying it from our neighbor, the expectation would be is that now you're pulling off forage and grain. And when you pull the grain off, no one gets too nervous about the nutrient removal because the stover or the stalks stay on the field. So rightfully so, there's an interest in replacing those nutrients, primarily in the form of N, P, and K, that you would remove in the forage. And there's pretty good estimates of the amount of N, P, and K that's in the forage part of the silage. And for a lot of people, just to remind everybody, at the time of silage harvest, again, moisture corrected, so on a dry matter basis, it's about half forage and about half grain. And it works out almost consistently at the right time to harvest silage that it's about 52% grain, 50 to 54% grain, with the rest being forage. So my point is that remainder that you pull off in silage is forage. The crop producer wants you to pay for the N, P, and K that was removed. And obviously, you're getting charged fertilizer replacement prices for that. But Aaron, I think over the years, what's been frustrating to me, or at least the unfair part in that transaction, in my opinion, is that if I'm a feeder and I'm right next to you, I have lots of N, P, and K in manure. And yet we don't always pay fertilizer price for the manure. So I would suggest that you make a bit of a barter relationship. And that is, if you take silage off, you'll put manure back on, and that'll replace that N, P, and K. And which is actually a pretty good move because the manure will act like a sponge. You may be planting a cover crop and need the nutrients anyway, fertilizer. So there's a lot of symbiotic advantages to harvesting, chopping silage, and then putting manure right back out on those acres.
Galen, as we think about corn silage and harvesting it well, one of the critical things with that, as we think about getting it put up and stored, is packing it, getting it packed well. Talk through the importance of that, and then also with that, covering silage and why that's really critical to keeping the product that we put up.
Yeah, there's really three management practices that are critical. One is packing it and going to give you some recommendations on how much to pack. Two is you should explore the use of inoculants or not. There's lots of different inoculant options, and at least based on benchtop experiments, they've been shown to help decrease losses at the time of harvest and the time of feeding. And then third is covering it, and a more oxygen limiting barrier you can get, the better. And there's some really cool options on covers, but the most critical thing is get it covered, and get it covered as soon as you get the bunker made. So obviously, in most operations, we're talking about bunker storage. And so the target to pack it is 16 pounds of dry matter or more per cubic foot. On an as-is basis, that's 45 pounds or more of corn silage in a 1 foot by 1 foot cube. And that's quite a bit of weight. So it takes a lot of packing. I think our dairy cousins have done a better job over the years of managing shrink and putting up silage. And we're on a bit of a mission to have all of our beef producers do a better job. Because frankly, you're going from an ingredient that we think is cost-effective, a good energy source for whether you have cows or backgrounding calves or your feeder, but you can go from having a really cost-effective energy source as corn silage to not making it worthwhile to put up. So how you manage this is probably the most critical 2 days or 2 weeks or whatever it takes, the most critical 2 weeks of how silage is going to work for you in terms of how profitable it'll be.
What are we typically looking at on silage in terms of dry matter shrink for a well-managed bunker versus one where maybe it did not get packed well, didn't get covered?
Yeah, you can go the best I've seen. It is a difficult measure, first off, because really you want to quantify pounds of dry matter harvested and put in the bunker and pounds of dry matter fed. And you can imagine that's a little bit tough to do when you got to add it all up. But best estimates I've seen of shrink out there in terms of doing the best job, it's hard to get below 10 or 12% shrink on a dry matter basis. Sometimes people say, well, my solid shrink's only 8%. Well, that's because they measured the as is weighed in and the as is weighed out, which remember I said solids gets a little wetter in the pile. And so it's actually deflates your shrink estimate. But I think a 10 to 12% is excellent. 15 would be normal. And if you get above 18 to 20% shrink, I think you should explore not putting up silage and going to some alternative. Because so that's how important it is.
Yeah, and that's really not, in my mind, huge differences. I mean, to be quite frank,
No, they're not. And you look at some of the piles that you see, unfortunately, in some of the country, and not covered and not packed real well and a little bit loose and not feeding it out at a fast enough rate. You got all that stuff up, and it is not hard to get to 20%. Now, Aaron, I would say a lot of times silage gets a bad rap for shrink. Our hays shrink too. Our dry feeds, that are forages that are kept outside can shrink quite a bit too. So I don't think the sky's falling to expect some shrink, but it is really important to manage. If nothing else, our biggest benefit to the listener today is pay attention when you're putting up silage on how you pack it, use of inoculant, and covering it with an oxygen limiting barrier.
Galen, you mentioned this at the start of our conversation, but I want to circle back to, what do we do if we're thinking about ensiling a corn crop that maybe is hail damaged or drought stressed? What are some kind of rules of thumb or guidelines there? Because in some cases, we're trying to make the best out of a mess.
Yeah, exactly. First off, if it's put up at the right moisture, and I think that means anything that's, frankly, anything above 55 to 60% moisture is critical, because having enough water in that silage, whether it's drought damaged or hail damaged, that's critical because that water helps keep it go anaerobic faster. So if it gets too dry, it's hard to get all the air packed pushed out of it. So a lot of times, let's say I get a hailstorm, I have to wait a week or two, that plant dies and it's drying down fast in the field. You got to be careful there. So one is getting it put up at the right moisture, but what better alternative is there? And so make sure your insurance is in place if you have that, and your estimates on damage, and then get it processed, and the stem and the leaf that's left and so on still has value as a feed, and silage might be the best way to capture any of that value. The hard part then is okay, what's the value to the if you're going to try and market that to your neighbor cattle producer, the hard part is coming up with a fair value, because now it doesn't have the grain in it. So we think that anything between 50 to 60% of the normal silage value is probably a fair trade, but it's more difficult to establish a gold, some of these golden rules on what's the value of corn silage in those situations. If you're the, again, in many of these cases, if you own the corn ground and you're putting it up as the cattle producer, it doesn't really give me heartburn if you don't value it perfectly, because either your farming operation made a little too much, or your cattle producing operation made a little too much, but it's still your bank accounts. It becomes more tricky when you're buying it from your neighbor.
Galen, you've done a lot of research with corn silage. Maybe just kind of give some quick rules of thumb in terms of using it in a backgrounding, finishing diet. What are some things to remember about the advantages of using that and how you can leverage that as you think about feeding cattle?
Yeah, the silage, corn silage for backgrounding calves is excellent, but you got to pay attention to how we manage the protein in the diet, because those young, rapidly growing calves, in other words, there's enough energy in this silage to get 2.5 to 3 pounds a day backgrounding gains if you get the protein right. And what I mean by that is it's a little complicated, right, Aaron? But a lot of producers have heard us talking about protein that's used in the rumen. I heard us talk about bypass protein. I don't want to get too complex, but ultimately, combining silage with some of these bypass proteins, the one most economical source, of course, that we have today is distillers grain. So when you hear people like me say, well, a backgrounding program where you feed 80 to 85% silage and 15% distillers and a little bit of calcium and some mineral and vitamins, it's hard to beat that program. That's because the distillers has the right kind of protein to match with the silage. So I think it's an excellent feed for backgrounding calves. You know, you still have to adjust calves to it. It's a fermented feed. So if you get in some high stress, you know, freshly weaned calves, they'll take a week or two to take to it, but they will. And then for finishing cattle, you know, we've actually, for farmer feeders that can handle the silage volume, we've looked at ways that they could maybe make more money by feeding, you know, more than the traditional amount of silage as a roughage. So instead of feeding 10 to 15% in the diet as a roughage source, which works great, maybe feed 25 or 30% because it's more economical. You can make the cattle a little bigger because they do gain a little slower. They're a little less efficient, but you're making more money. So I think for private farmer feeders that kind of own all the cattle, they might want to consider feeding more than the traditional amount of silage. But we've been on a bit of a mission to illustrate that corn silage, you know, I think it lost some favor. It used to be real common. Everybody put up silage. Then people kind of got away from it. But I think it's something that people should certainly look at if they have the bunker storage facilities or the flat storage areas to put it up, and they have a lot of corn production around them. And again, you price it in the ration at 70 to 72% or less of corn, it's really economical.
Galen, in your research, you've also hosted a Silage for Beef Cattle conference, actually a number of them, and those
Yeah.
are available to for folks to go look at the beef.unl.edu website. There's a link in the article that we are discussing today, but just talk a little about those conferences and the resources that are there and the value folks might find in reviewing some of that information.
Actually, Aaron, University of Nebraska Extension, Iowa State Extension, and Lalemann Animal Nutrition have teamed up actually over the last decade. We've done five of them. We call them the Silage for Beef Cattle conferences. And then one, two, three, four, five. We weren't very ingenious there. But, you know, really our goal there is to bring forth the latest that we think we know about silage and brought in experts really from around the world to those meetings. And benefit to anybody that missed them is they're all there. Their recordings are there if you want to sit through them. In many cases, there's some papers attached with them, I think, for every conference. And at least for a few of them, there's a short version. So if they don't want to watch me, for example, for 30 minutes, they don't have to. They can watch the 5-minute version and see if that's intriguing to them. But yeah, it's been really good, and appreciate obviously the sponsorship and the partnership with Lalemann, and obviously co-hosting it with Iowa State.
Dr. Erickson, anything else you'd like to focus on today as we point towards wrapping up? Some keys you'd like folks to consider on this topic?
Well, I think again, if you're in corn country and you're looking for what we believe is a cost-effective energy source for backgrounding calves and finishing cattle, but even for cows, right, Aaron? It's just that cows, you want to be a little careful because it's actually too good of a feed. You can get fat cows on silage diets because they'll eat more than they need. But if you limit feed them some on silage or combine it with other low quality forage, again, it's a works well in cow situations too. But you have to apply the management that we've talked about and make sure you apply the correct pricing. By the time you deliver it to the cattle, it'll end up being 11 to 12 times the price of corn, and that's because of the cost of the storage. But I wanted to point out one more thing. If you're going to price silage, you're really pricing it in the fall at the time of corn harvest, because the corn is the cheapest at the time of harvest, and then of course goes up throughout the rest of the year because someone has to store all of our year's corn needs that's harvested in the fall. Well, you can't double charge silage both the increased corn price for storing dry corn and charging the storage cost on the bunker silage. So again, storing in the silage is economical. Buying that corn in the fall, usually when it's the cheapest, is the most economical. And if managed right, I think you can have an economical feed to replace, certainly replace some hays and forages if we're limited, and even in some cases, replacing some corn grain and finishing cattle diets.
Dr. Erickson, thanks for your time today and for your research you've done, the conferences you put together on this topic. I think it's one that we have as much good data as I think anybody in the upper Midwest as far as using corn silage and beef cattle rations. And that's for a major part from the work you've done. And so appreciate your time today and for being part of the topic.
Yeah, my pleasure and appreciate that. And yeah, as if people have questions, as they know, they can reach out to you or their local extension people. And yeah, I do think we've got some good sound science to help make decisions.
Well, for more information on the topic that was discussed in today's Beef Watch podcast, you can find this article at beef.unl.edu. The title of the article is "That Corn Crop Worth More Silage or Grain?"